Ever since the use of cash bail in New York was dramatically scaled back at the start of 2020, there's been a debate in the state about whether or not the change in pretrial detention was resulting in more crime and making New York less safe. And while the conversation has largely relied on anecdotal evidence or data from other states, we now have comprehensive data documenting what actually happened in the aftermath of the policy taking effect. And we're going to crunch some of the numbers with the Times Union's Joshua Solomon, who did a deep dive into this issue. Welcome back to the show, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get into what the data tells us or doesn't tell us about the consequences of restricting the use of cash bail, can you explain what data the state produced and the time period it covers?
Sure. It's a lot of data. Tens of thousands of rows of data that they collected based off of what the legislature told them to collect, which is information about every case that was arrested from January 20 to July 2021, an 18-month period. And among those cases, you have everything from race, gender, county, the judge's name, their representation, to their charges at arrest, at arraignment, what happened to the case, bail, bond. And the last column is whether or not they were rearrested and for what charge. And that's kind of the column that a lot of people have been focusing on.
Well, yeah, let's dive right into this. How many New Yorkers were, I guess, released without a cash bail requirement who previously would have been remanded if they were unable to produce the necessary money during this period?
So myself and data editor at the TU, and we looked at the data, and it's not like a simple way to look at it because the state doesn't have necessarily something that says if this, then that, based off of the legislation. Instead, you have a lot of penal laws that you have to sort through and check off and say, was this one a part of the reforms or not? And so what we did was we looked at some information from advocates on the issue, some information from DAs on the issue of which laws we should focus in on, which laws are a part of the reforms. And then from there, we sorted through it and we found that it made the most sense to start at July 2020, because if you remember, in between January 20 and July 20, they had some amendments to bail and discovery.
They rolled back some of the eligibility requirements for cash bail in the wake of some pushback,
right?
You know, they felt in those first early months.
So the data was a little messy there. So we looked at a 12-month period, July 2020 through June 2021, mm-hmm. and we found about 98,000 cases of folks that may have not been held previously. Obviously, they could have made bond in certain cases, but 98,000 folks that this legislation affected.
And can you remind us, for the people in this period, this 98,000, what are the litany of crimes that they may have been accused of in which judges could no longer impose cash bail? Can you just give us some of them?
There are a lot.
That's fine. Just give us a couple reminders.
A lot of nonviolent felonies, from different types of assault to burglaries, robberies, different types of assault of sexual matters. It's a long list.
Okay. Yeah, I remember it was a big issue, and that was part of the contention, was that there was some argument about the merits of some of these crimes no longer having cash bail attached. So how many of the 98,000, or what percentage, were then subsequently accused of another crime while awaiting trial? And what do we know about the crimes that they are then subsequently accused of?
So about 30% of that 98,000 were accused, charged with some type of crime. The overwhelming majority of that were misdemeanors. Some of them were nonviolent felonies. And then you get into it that there was about 4%, little less than that, of crimes that were violent felonies that were accused to the folks who were awaiting trial. Out of that, we can make it even more narrow. Just under 1% of the 98,000 were people who were charged with a violent felony with a firearm. And to me, that's one of the most salient points there, because a lot of the rhetoric around the issue has been there's been a lot more violent crime on the street as a byproduct of the bail reforms. And particularly, a lot of the conversation has been around gun violence.
So then, based on these numbers, like take that 4% number, does that mean that the cashless bail restrictions are working because 4% is such a low number? Or does that mean that these restrictions are not working because 4% of 98,000 is still thousands? And the argument could be made that this means thousands of potential criminals are committing crimes again that they might not have otherwise been able to commit, assuming they are guilty of those crimes. What are you hearing about people's sort of analysis of this data?
Right. So it's about 98,000 cases, not necessarily 98,000 people. We don't know. It could be the same person 10 times out of that. You know, one person could have 10 cases in that year. But nonetheless, 98,000 cases out of them, 3,500 violent felonies. Out of that, it's about 775 cases that were with a firearm, violent felonies with a firearm. So as you said, a lot of advocates on bail reform have said, look, the percent is really low, and we should look at the overall picture. The goal, main goal of bail reform is to make sure that there's equity on who's being held. Your economic status shouldn't dictate whether or not you're held. And you got tens of thousands of people who may have previously been held and now will not. Now we're not being held, and that could reverse different cycles of poverty, different cycles of losing your home, losing your job if you were to go into jail for a week, 2 weeks, whatever it may be. Republicans on the issue have taken up the number, saying 3,500 cases, that is a lot of violent felonies. That is very important to every family that have been affected by those potential crimes. So the issue has cleaved basically the way it has the entire time. The data has shown, has given a lot of fuel to the folks who have said the things that they've been saying the whole time. Even though we have data that shows what happened, that doesn't necessarily mean that the debate around it has stopped. And one of those reasons is the fact that we don't have data that precedes this. We don't know what it used to be like. And, you know, there's data in New York City that has shown that since 2009, about 4% of people are rearrested within 12 months after their initial arrest. Advocates are pointing to that data saying 4%'s always been the number. There's no change here. That data is a little messier than just that at top level, but nonetheless, there's a lot of confounding variables here that make it tough to say, yes, the changes to the bail laws work. No, the changes to the bail laws created more violence.
For listeners just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Times Union Capitol reporter Josh Solomon, who did a deep dive into recently released state data that gives us our first real meaningful understanding of the ramifications of the restrictions of cash bail that went into effect in 2020. And you talked about how there's not a good data set to compare this to in the past. Are there other shortcomings of this data that you think people should be cognizant of as they digest some of the top line numbers that we're talking about?
Sure, there are plenty. There are thousands of cases that fall under this category of null on rearrest, which is DCJS, it's the state's way of saying, we don't have data on that person. We don't know if they committed a felony, if they were charged with a felony, if they were charged with a misdemeanor, if they were charged with nothing. What we know is we don't initially have fingerprints on them. So we know that that data set could swing. The numbers could become, the percentages could become even smaller. The raw numbers could become even bigger with that null piece of the data set. The other thing we know based off of analyzing this data is that all it's looking at is, were you rearrested between when your case started and when your case closed? And for some people, that case is open for a very long time. And I found plenty of cases in which people were rearrested months and months and months afterward, after their initial arraignment, which is to say that when you're talking about people who were arrested and arraigned in April, May, June 2021, and the data set stops at July 2021, there's a chance that they may end up being charged with a crime because their case hasn't reached disposition yet. So some of those numbers can increase as well. But overall, every time we kind of play with the data and see, okay, well, what if you look at that? What if you play out that scenario? The numbers kind of hold true in terms of a percent. But looking at the actual how many people, how many cases, how many violent felonies have been committed, that number may move as we move forward.
And what about New Yorkers who maybe are arrested and maybe charges are brought against them and they are able to be released pending trial without any sort of cash restrictions, and ultimately the charges against them are dropped or they're found not guilty by their peers? And in those cases, those people, you know, never had to go behind bars, and they never should have based on the way the criminal system played out. Do we have any sense of how many or what percentage of the people that are benefiting from this law are covered by that? Because it seems like those are really the people that this change in the law is designed to help.
Sure, and we're in the initial stages of looking at that data and trying to get a firm number there, but off the bat, we're seeing that there are thousands of cases in which, out of the 98,000, there are thousands, at least a few, if not closer to 10,000, cases that ended up in being dismissed. Now, a case can be dismissed for a number of reasons, including that it was moved to another court, but the way we've looked at it is that there may be at least 10,000 cases that folk that were dismissed. Now, just to add a caveat onto that, because this data set is so complicated and so dense, some of those folks who ended up being dismissed still were charged with a violent felony in between their case. So there's nothing real clean about this data. And in general, I think it's always useful to remember that sweeping statements about complicated data often kind of smooth over how dense that data is.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Times Union Capital reporter Josh Solomon. Josh, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.